Peace, friends. My name is Erin, and I am a volunteer on the teaching team. And I have to tell you, before I begin, that this week has been like the highest of highs and lowest of lows here for me. Highest of highs, Tuesday, I started a new job. I am now an elementary school librarian. I know. This is like my dream job. I'm pretty sure unless you wanted to pay me to like stay home by myself and read books, that might be the next level. But for right now, this is everything I ever hoped to do. I'm so excited. So that's my high. And then I'm coming today here at the low. Today, exactly 2 years ago today, one of my best friends passed away really unexpectedly. Wendy was my age. She has 4 boys, and she was married to a great guy named Steve. And as we come up on this anniversary, it's still really difficult to comprehend what happened. And because it came out of absolutely nowhere, it was just this thing that was wrong with her heart that no one knew about. It's like she went to bed that night, and she and her husband had a conversation over whether their oldest was old enough yet to go on a sleepover, and they decided, yeah, he was, and they fell asleep, and about 5 minutes later, he heard her gasp, and he woke up, and she was gone. And in that moment, you know, he calls 911 and he starts CPR and he calls for some of our friends and our family there, and they begin to pray. And they pray with that urgency, like, God, please, 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 oh my God, please, please. And my friend Amy had been praying so hard, and she's banging her wrist on the ground so hard that days later she's bruised here. And yet, she died. It's a storm I'm going through right now. And there have been moments of redemption for her husband and her boys, but it's still hard at the anniversary to remember that there won't be another moment where she walks into the room. And that's my storm. But I want to say that because I want to recognize that each and every one of us in this room have our own storms. And those storms look different. I mean, you might have lost your job. Maybe your marriage isn't what you hoped it would be. Maybe your health isn't that great. Maybe you love someone who doesn't recognize you anymore. Maybe you're raising a teenager, and that's a lot. How do you follow Jesus during those storms? We're going through a series right now based on a book by a guy named Adam Hamilton called Simon Peter. And I noticed there's 2 copies of the book left back in the micro bookstore. So pick up a copy if you'd like to know more about this humbling, mumbling, bumbling follower of Jesus. See, Simon Peter is mentioned more than just about anybody in the New Testament. And the thing that I love about him is he has no chill. You know? He's like, he's the first to say something, but he doesn't necessarily think about it first. He's the guy who's going to, like, walk on water, right? Only that didn't work out either. He's just that guy who's so human. And that's why we can relate to him. And so today, when I talk about following Jesus in a storm, he's been there. All right. See, all of the 4 Gospels, all the 4 books in the Bible that talk about Jesus' life have this story or some version of the story in it, but this is the one that shines the spotlight on poor old Simon Peter, which makes me wonder what Matthew had it in for dear old Simon Peter. But Matthew, as he's telling this story, does a couple things, and they're sort of like bifocals. So today, as we talk about this story, I want to consider that we're going to look at this story through 2 lenses. And the first is that Matthew's going to tell us what happened. Okay? He's going to tell us a story. But Matthew wasn't there in the boat, like, scribbling down notes, like, oh, this time this exact thing happened. Instead, he's remembering this years later as he's writing this, and he's being able to recognize, looking back and saying, what happened that day was a foreshadow to what's going to happen. So what happened in that boat is what's also going to happen. And not just later in that story, but to all of us. There will be storms in our life. Jesus said, if you follow me, if you're breathing on this earth, you're going to have trouble. And once again, Jesus is right. Here we are. So pay attention to both of those things, and we're going to kind of reflect on both of those as we go throughout this story. This story actually begins at the tail end of another story in Matthew. So this is the one where Jesus takes some kids' lunch, multiplies it. He feeds 5,000 men and the women and the children, but we're not counting them, I guess. And he feeds them all. There's enough food for everybody. It's a miracle. No one goes hungry. And so the crowd starts to push in on him, you know? That's compelling. Guy takes a kid's lunch and feeds the whole crowd. That's compelling. I want some of that, right? So they're pressing in on Jesus. They want a piece of his time. They want to touch him. They want to know everything about him. And Jesus is like, bro, I need a break. So instead, he sends his 12 followers, his closest friends, his disciples, away in a boat. And he's going to go up on a mountain to pray for a while. And he says, I'll meet you over on the other side. I'll meet you on the other side of the lake in a while. And when you're reading this story, the writer, Matthew, he wants to make sure you understand this point, okay? Super important point, Matthew says. First, Jesus made the disciples go into the boat and go to the other side of the lake while he stayed. Jesus stayed. Okay, Matthew, got it. Okay, next verse. Jesus went up a mountain and he was by himself. Okay, I get it, right? No one's with him. Got it. Okay, Matthew keeps going on, though. Just in case you didn't catch that yet, Jesus prayed on the mountain. He was alone. He was alone up there. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you. Helpful. Except it is. This is Matthew, like, underlining this fact. This is the first time in this gospel, in this book, that Jesus puts his friends in a boat and they're gone on without him. And this is Matthew reiterating this point because this is going to happen later in the story. This is a foreshadowing of what's going to happen later in the story. So it's also a foreshadowing for us. It's going to feel like we're in this boat. We get pushed out. Jesus is way up there on the mountain. And at first, this is no big deal. These are just, you know, these are fishers. They've been out on this lake before. Here's their boat. They would have known this boat. It looks pretty beat up now, but this was 1986. This is a boat of that era. It's in a museum. You would have had this boat, 12 guys in this boat, one sail, four oars. Got it. No big deal. Except when they go out on that lake, this lake that they know so well, I know how wide, I know how long. They also know that storms on this lake can be deadly. And they know, because they don't have GPS and they don't have, you know, Dark Sky, the app, they know that these things just pop up out of nowhere. And so water to them means chaos at times. And you see that throughout the Bible, like God does cool things with water. Moses comes up, parts the Red Sea, walks right through. Jesus yells at a storm, whole thing, immediately gone. And this time, they know, too, that this is chaos. So you got one sail. You've got four oars. You've got 12 guys. And they're all starting to crap themselves about this point. Okay? Picture this. I mean, it's pitch dark. You're in the middle of a lake. The waves are crashing into the boat. You're soaking wet. You're terrified. You hear that wind, you can feel the rain, and you can't see where you're going. The wind is blowing you off course. They're terrified. Worse, they don't know how deep the lake is. At that point, no one does, because they take this piece of weight and they tie a rope to it and they drop it down, and it doesn't touch the bottom. And so they consider this lake unfathomable. There's just, it's endless. And maybe at the bottom of that lake is actually the portal between this world and the world of the spirits and the ghosts. And this is also going through their heads that day. Not only does this not look good, but we are in uncharted territory here. So around 3 a.m., they start to see somebody. What? Their boat's a long way from land. The wind is against them, and yet here comes somebody. He came to them, Jesus came to them walking on the sea. What? Picture the terror, right? The disciples saw him walking on the sea. They're terrified and said, "It's a ghost!" They cried out in fear. Of course it's a ghost. It's unfathomable. Like, this ghost came up from underneath. We're dead. We're dead. We're goners. We're goners. Thanks, Jesus. Thanks for staying back to pray. Hope it works out for you. One sail, and that's useless. They've got four oars. Those aren't doing you any good anymore. 12 guys crapping themselves, and now a ghost. Great. Great. Jesus rolls up, cool, calm, collected. "Guys, calm down. It's me. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid." And that translation, "it's me," reminds me of, like, have you ever had to wake a kid up who's having a nightmare? And you're like shaking them, like, "Come on, it's okay. It's me. I'm here. It's me. Calm down. You're safe. Don't be afraid." But if you look at that verse, that word, that "it's me," that simple sentence, it's in the Greek, it means "I am," which is like throwback language to Moses and the burning bush. When God's calling out to Moses from the burning bush, "Moses, I got a job for you." Moses is like, "Who are you?" And God simply answers, "I am. I am." And so as Jesus is coming to them on the water, he's saying, "I am." And Matthew, in the first century here, his readers would have noticed two things. "I am," ding, that's God language. But second, in their ancient literature, only a deity, only gods can walk on water. Ding, 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 ding. This is Matthew underlining this point over and over. Remember, Jesus is up on the mountain, right? That's where his friends saw him last time. This doesn't make sense. All of a sudden, "I am" is here, and he's walking on water. And this is where Matthew, like, zooms the lens in tight on our good friend Simon Peter here, because 11 guys in the boat are freaking out, and Simon's leaning over the edge like, "Hey, God, Jesus, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come walk to you." And Jesus says, "Come, sure, come." Jesus sees Peter, this eager beaver little Peter, walking out on the water, and yet he can still feel the wind in his face. Peter can. And he's soaking wet, shivering, looking ahead, and he's scared. He takes his eyes off Jesus, and he starts to sink. And Jesus, he reaches his hand down, and he saves him. He says, "Jesus, help me, save me." And he does. And as he's doing this, Jesus says, "Oh, you of little faith, why do you doubt?" I want to pause for a second here to give Peter some props before we tear him apart. JK. Instead, Peter, you'll notice he's the only one, the first one who's recorded to say, "Lord, I'm coming to you." He recognizes that holiness in Jesus. He recognizes that otherness. Good job, Peter. And you'll notice that Matthew records him calling for help. Matthew records Jesus saying, "You of little faith, why do you doubt?" But Jesus doesn't yell at him and say, "Why'd you get out of the boat in the first place, idiot? Come on." That's not what Jesus says. See, we think that this is a story about needing to keep your eyes on Jesus, right? If only he would have kept his eyes on Jesus, he could have walked on water. And we hear that a lot, and there's something in that. I mean, there's parts of that that's good and true. Yes, when you're in a storm, keep your eyes on Jesus. Good advice. But that's not what Matthew is underlining in this story. The beef that Matthew had was that, remember, that guy of little faith had just come from that place where he saw some kid's lunch get turned into enough for everybody to eat. You saw me do that, Jesus can say. You saw me. And yet here's Peter's flaw here, is that he's still asking for more proof. Jesus, if you are who you say you are, tell me to walk on water. He's throwing it out to God. Say you are who I think you are. And Jesus is saying, I am. I am here with you. Trust me. Don't be afraid. It's me. And here's what I mean when Matthew writes both about what happened and what's going to happen. We know what happened. We know that Peter started to sink. He needed help to get back in the boat. We know. He leaves his friends in the boat. He was afraid. And Matthew says, that's going to happen. You too will be asking God to prove himself to you. You too can't walk on water. You're human, bro. You can't do it. Here's what Matthew is saying too. Sometimes God does, but often God does not show up in our lives in moments of tragedy to stop the laws of physics, biology, gravity. He can, but often he doesn't. And so that night when Wendy passed away, you've got her husband Steve, and he's trying to get her heart started again. And it doesn't. And the EMS come, and they try to get her heart started again. And they take her to the hospital, and they get something, but she's not back. She never comes back. And is it because all of our church friends weren't praying hard enough? They didn't have enough faith? They weren't asking just the magic word to Jesus? No. Their eyes were on Jesus the whole time. Was it because Wendy didn't have enough faith? That's insane. Wendy's faith was so strong. She led her husband to have a life of faith, and they've raised their sons that way. And when I was going through a high-risk pregnancy, she was the one in the middle of the night I could text, and she would text back, God sees you. God sees you. She'd been a Christian all her life, but she, the summer before she passed away, decided, like, I should do something about this. I should get baptized because Jesus says we should be baptized, and she just never got around to it. And so she decided to that summer, and making that public statement for her was kind of embarrassing. She's a very private person. But for that, it was so beautiful and meaningful. And so I know her eyes were on Jesus too. See, this story isn't that if only he had more faith, he could have walked on water. If only he had kept his eyes on Jesus, he could have done the whole thing, walked ashore. This message isn't for us, like, if only we had more faith, spectacular things would happen. Often our problems won't be solved in miraculous ways. Matthew is saying, it's going to be hard. You're going to get scared. You're human. You are not God. And I know, because I'm on the prayer team here, when you write a prayer on the back of your connection card, I'm one of the many people who receive it, and I pray over it during the week. And I know, because I've read those, that this room right now, there are a lot of people in here who are hurting. I know there are a lot of people in your own storms right now. God sees you. General Conference is kind of a storm too. It feels like one. When the United Methodist denomination got together and the vote came through that they were going to uphold the traditional view of man and woman and not marrying LGBTQIA people, that feels like a storm. But Matthew's underlining this really, really boldly. Jesus didn't stay up on the mountain that night. Jesus didn't stay up there in some spiritual, like, moment with God. He knew his friends were in trouble, and he went to them. They didn't have to go to him. He came to them. He saw them and what they needed. The question that we had earlier, that how do we follow Jesus during these storms? So hang tight. Let Jesus in your boat. Hang tight. You'll notice in this story, Jesus doesn't yell at the other 11 who stay in the boat. I remember Jesus put these guys in this boat together. He picked out these 12 specific people, put them in the boat, pushed them off. He knew what they were feeling. And he doesn't say, come on, why don't you love me enough to walk on water? Could have done it. That's not what he says. Instead, they get in the boat. That's important. Jesus, look around. Like, these are the people that God's put you in a boat with. These are the people here. Think of the people in your family, in your community. Think of the people who are, like, your people. They're in the boat with you. One cool illustration is, like, look up at the ceiling. And you'll notice there are exposed beams, and this is pretty popular in church architecture. Here's a picture of the church where I grew up, very formal. But you'll notice the beams are exposed, and that's on purpose. Because it's actually, some architects make this to look like the bottom of a boat. It's meant to look that way to symbolize what the church can be. And not only is it a boat, you know, we're not like this. So are we drowning? Somebody asked me that after first service. Maybe, it feels like that sometimes. But when we're under here, consider like first century fishermen, they could lie under them for shelter and protection. You'd flip the boat over and get under it for shelter. That's where we are. And it's not that we would come into this specific building, but that this is a metaphor. The people in your boat are here to help you. They're here to offer you that grace, to say, don't be afraid. Jesus sees us. He is here with us in this boat. You've got one sail. Maybe you've lost your four oars. Maybe your boat has capsized. Maybe you're with a bunch of people who are crapping themselves. Jesus is in your boat. He's in your boat. As I pray here for us now, thank God for that boat and the people in it. Jesus, I pray too that the people that we talked about earlier about the Capitol campaign that we don't even know yet, that they too would experience that sort of grace and shelter within relationships here. And from God in this place. Jesus, thank you for boats. and the people you put in them. And thank you most of all that you don't stay up on the mountain when we're hurting. You come to us. Thank you. And I ask these things in Jesus' name. And all who agreed said, Amen.